of Houston Sports Radio, the preeminent NFL draft analyst. You found The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Being joined right now by Seth Walder, ESPN Sports Analytics writer. And follow him on Twitter, at Seth Walder, W-A-L-D-E-R. And you're going to see all the analytics stuff that you could possibly want. Just put out a list, as a matter of fact, of all the people in the NFL, in the analytics departments. And holy cow. Seth, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Doing great. So where is you? This list that you just put out?
It shocks you, doesn't it?
It's unbelievable. See, what's funny the is, number of people in analytics right now in football.
Yeah.
Seth, where was this list, let's even say, 3 years ago? How many more people are on the list of NFL analytics than they were 3 years ago?
Ooh, that's a great question. I should know the answer. I feel like I started doing this list 2 years ago, almost probably exactly 2 years ago, and I would guess it's about maybe 40% increase since then. That's a ballpark, but it's substantial. I mean, it's definitely been growing quickly.
Have you noticed that? So, you know, I've got friends in the league, and I do some different things with NFL teams. And one of the things that I think has been really overplayed, really even over the last 5 years, but for sure over the last 3 years, I think there's some leftover tweets that people have about, you know, NFL and the analytics. And I know Pro Football Focus has brought it into view a little more quickly to the public. But I think the perception that the NFL doesn't value analytics, anyone who says that is just that narrative is dead to me.
I think that's right. Like, this is a rapidly changing thing. So I agree with you. Like, where we were 5 years ago or 10 years ago is very different than where we are today. Mm-hmm. I do think that there's a wide variety of how teams treat analytics. So, like, the range from, like, the Browns or Eagles to teams at the bottom, like the Titans, who only just a year ago made their first full-time analytics hire. I do think that there's a pretty big range in those teams. But certainly, like, certainly teams are using quantitative analysis to inform decision making. There is, to me, I think, if we're comparing to baseball or basketball, the NFL is still behind, but it's made a lot of great strides in that area. Agreed.
What now? The simplistic thing is, okay, when do I go for it on fourth down? First down passing, all stuff like that. Mm-hmm. How detailed are teams getting, like giving a certain guy the ball in certain situations or stuff like that? Are they getting into baseball analytics where a pitcher player matchup and stuff of that nature?
Basketball too.
Where they touch the ball on the floor. Right, yeah. Absolutely. How detailed are they getting right now in football?
I think it depends, but I think that's a really good question. So you have the fourth down stuff, like you said, and I think that teams are getting quite detailed. Like, we heard Brandon Staley talk about how in their model they're putting in specific inputs related to that game, right? Which makes sense, right? You want to, if that team is, maybe they're particularly, your opponent is good against stopping the run, well, that matters quite a bit if you're trying to go for it on fourth and one. I think when it comes to the matchup, like you say, like regular play matchup questions, right? Like, how is my receiver going to do against this corner on in-breaking routes? That's the kind of stuff that teams are going to be, are much more, that's the hidden part, right? That's the part that's not going to make its way out to us, because that's the more cutting edge stuff. That's where they're using the player tracking data to build out those insights. And I think that, like, I see it as an iceberg, basically. The fourth down stuff, that's like the tip of the iceberg. We can see it. And then there's all this other stuff underneath the surface the teams are doing to, inform their decision-making, inform their play calling. That is much harder for us to see, but definitely a lot of teams are using data analysis to inform those choices.
Seth, one of the things that I find interesting, even at your organization, is – so I think ESPN's programming, you don't have to comment on this, but ESPN's television programming as really, frankly, with most mainstream programming, plays to the lowest common denominator, basic, simple narratives. But it is interesting, though, that even inside of that, you guys are with the more cutting-edge analytics stuff, and all of these different entities now want to have their own analytics director, because there is an understanding that there are plenty of fans out there who do want smarter content, who do want to understand the probabilities and the math behind, and frankly, the biggest advantages that teams have. How do you think that these media entities are reckoning with lowest common denominator programming, but still taking care of the growing segment of people who really want smarter content?
I think that, you know, my old boss, Ben Alomar, used to be the director of analytics at ESPN. The way he put it is, teams are using data analysis to inform their decision-making. And so if we want to explain why teams are making the choices that they are, then we need to be doing that as well. And so to me, if we want to communicate to fans and explain to them why the Vikings would trade down with the Lions from 12 to 32 and why that deal, which was unorthodox, might make sense, then we need to have done that kind of analysis on our own so that we can make that explanation. And I also think that we can give our viewers credit. Like, they are, you know, they are smart and they can understand, you know, a lot of advanced, you know, football or other sport concepts. And I do think that we've had a lot of success in this area. Like, to me, one of our biggest successes with player tracking data has been our win rates, our pass block win rate and pass rush win rate. Those are stats that did not exist a couple of years ago, and now it makes me so happy, warms my heart when there's like a big offensive line free agent signing, and without having done anything, you know, I can go to the ESPN.com story and I know that it'll say, yeah, fifth among tackles in pass block win rate last year, and I think that it's been able to catch on, and I hope at least the fans find it informing to have some data behind line play.
I want to ask a quick question of Seth Walder, who is our guest right now. Seth, are you the director of analytics for ESPN? What's your official title with ESPN?
I'm a sports analytics writer.
Okay, you're the writer. You're one of the writers there. Do you write beyond just the NFL? Do you do basketball and baseball as well?
I do college football as well, and I dabble in college basketball when we get to like March.
Okay, here's a question I have for you. One of the things that is interesting to me is this is it's not an NBA question, but it's the kind of the concept. We had Daryl Morey here, and you, of course, will know who Daryl Morey is.
Yeah.
Daryl Morey used to really get over on people with trades when he was with Houston, and then lately it seems like things have really changed. I really wonder if the way that analytics is being used now in terms of understanding value of draft picks, value of contracts, value of age and when players have breakout seasons, if that is really normalizing the field amongst all teams and other sports, because they're all starting to see things through a very similar analytics lens. Do you think that's happening right now in the sports you cover at least?
Yes. I think that basically over time, the edge that you gain from the quantitative analysis, it shrinks because everyone else is sort of catching up. And so, like, to your point, when the Rockets were doing things that other teams weren't doing, they might have had a really great strong edge. Now that kind of knowledge is all around. And, you know, in baseball, you're working super hard for tiny edges. But to me, the lesson in that is if you are an NFL team, you want to be first. You want to be the team that has developed a better measure of cornerback play, right? Something that's really hard to measure quantitatively before everyone else does, because that means that you get a few years when you have this advantage that everybody else doesn't have. It's not going to last forever, but you can grab it now. If you don't grab it now, you're not going to get it.
Seth Walder with us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. ESPN just put out rankings of positions by people in the football world. Do you guys rank the players analytically, and how close are the football people with just their human eyes versus what you're looking at players analytically? How close are your lists?
I don't know that I don't have an exact list myself, but I do use our numbers to sort of like inform opinions, and I would, you know, happily make lists. And so what I think what happens is, by and large, they line up pretty well. But I think there are definitely times when there are players that jump out that I'm like, wow, really? So, like, a, you know, to me, like a guy like Grady Jarrett, who was ninth on the defensive tackles list, and to me is just been a clear-cut top three defensive tackle over the last several years. By our win rates, it's always been Aaron Donald, Chris Jones, Grady Jarrett. These guys are the best pass-rushing defensive tackles in the league by our numbers, and it's been so consistent. So I was really shocked to see him. Obviously, he's, you know, he's played a few years now, but to see a guy like him be that low on the list. Or like an A.J. Terrell, who was ninth also in the corner list. I mean, he put up incredible numbers last season. And I think, yeah, there's guys who maybe have a little bit longer track records, you can understand, but I was pretty shocked to see Terrell be all the way down below someone like Pat Surtain or a Denzel Ward. You know, Terrell was, I think, better than those guys last year. So there are definitely players that stand out to me. By and large, it matches up, but I think that's why it's interesting.
How close are we to you guys having war that analytically driven numbers about football players as baseball is?
I would say medium close. Like, not that, you know, I credit that PFF, they do have a war metric themselves. It's something that we feel like we have a decent way to go to quantifying some other positions, like corners, like I mentioned, safeties, off-ball linebackers. We have metrics to get at some of the ways that they produce, but to determine a player's entire value, I don't think we're quite there yet, personally, at least like from where we are. But I think it would be, but obviously you're sort of striving to get there. But football is much more complicated when it comes to that, because mm-hmm. you have these sort of wide positional differences in players, and also like the interaction of players, right? Like I think like if Davante Adams is a 3 and Aaron Rodgers is a 5, in baseball you can put them together and say they're an 8. I'm not sure that in football it's quite the same. You put them together in football, it might be a 12, but without each other, because you have this great quarterback, great receiver, they might be worth more than the sum of their parts. You could say the same about an offensive line, where maybe it's just the weak link that matters on the offensive line. So a really good tackle is good, but a really terrible tackle is more bad than the good tackle is good, if that makes sense. You have these always complicated wrinkles within football that I think you have to sort out.
Yeah, I think it's one of the difficulties to me, and I use, with film study, I use data also. I try to combine the two in my player evaluations. But it is tricky, I think, because I don't think football can be – it's not the same as basketball. It's not the same as baseball, but where you have – especially baseball, where you have – one-on-one, you were looking for a successful outcome every time on every pitch and every swing and every, you know, but in football, there are some nuances to play calling. There are some nuances to your amount of dependence upon a play caller or another player for you to have a successful play. Not necessarily an offensive line, defensive line. I get what you're saying there. Although my dad, who is a longtime NFL line coach, they do get a little fired up about people making judgments on success and a lack of success when you don't know, you know, some of what the rules are for, and you're going to run into that at all times. But I'm okay with a plus minus of mistakes being made when you do help to capture, you know, the general success of a player, which I do think is happening with analytics right now in the NFL.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's absolutely true that, you know, you don't know the play call, you don't know the exact scheme in any given play. I think the counters to that are always, well, neither does, you know, another team, right? Like if I work for the Falcons and we're drafting a free agent who plays for the Raiders, and you're trying to figure out how good is this player we want to potentially sign,
right?
You don't have their play call on every play, so you're still judging them. And then the other thing is, but still fair, like a still fair, I think, critique. The thing we gain, I think, is consistency and objectivity. Like no matter what the when we run like our pass block win rate, it's judging every play the exact same, and it's never biased toward a player. Like Aaron Donald finishes first in defensive tackle pass rush win rate, you know, every single year. The model doesn't know who Aaron Donald is. It just knows that this person, 99, consistently is beating its blocker more than anybody else, but it doesn't go into a play thinking, oh yeah, he's probably gonna eat up this guard. He doesn't know that, and so we get that same play graded the same way for every play in the season, and that is, I think, a nice advantage.
Seth Walder, ESPN at Seth Walder on Twitter. Just followed him to get all of his information. That'll be good stuff. Especially come fantasy time, I would think. Right, Seth? Am I right about
that? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do some fantasy and betting stuff too. Absolutely.
You're going to help me out fantasy-wise? I appreciate it. Yeah. That's Seth Walder, ESPN, right here on ESPN 97.5. Thanks, Seth. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, guys.
All right, Seth Walder, analytics writer for ESPN.